as long tail catch you'll find it.
Ho way, ho way, you must hunt.
She's the lady, say, of the salty times. Clear away the track and let the bull jive run.
Salty times is our life motto. We live a salty life of oceanic devotion. We surf, sail, dive, as well as contribute to citizen science for the health of our oceans.
Hi, I'm Bass, and welcome to Salty Times Radio. Salty Times Radio is a chance for us to share our sailing adventure with you up the West Australian coast to Indonesia. We'll be spending the next 12 months sailing from Fremantle to Roti, the east coast of Indonesia. We'll be recording each step of our journey as it unfolds. We'll be interviewing people we meet along the way. We'll be sharing sailing, cruising, and sustainability tips. We'll also be doing citizen science projects for our oceans and sharing the results with you.
You can find out more about our journey on www.saltytimes.com and also on Facebook and Instagram under Salty Times.
So check us out.
In this week's episode, we'll be sharing more about who we both are, what our voyage is all about, and some of our citizen science projects.
We'll also be introducing you to our lovely vessel Charade.
At the end, we'll be sharing our very own sea shanty and what's coming up in the next episode. We hope you enjoy.
All hands aboard of the Lady Sea! Clear away the tack and let the boat join run!
I want to tell you a little bit about the voyage that we're about to undertake. It's been a dream of ours for quite a long time, and the reason why we ended up choosing to do the trip up the West Australian coast was that we bought our vessel in Fremantle, and we had been looking at vessels in America on the East and West coast and thinking that maybe we could sail across the Pacific. And we actually ended up looking at a vessel in Panama and nearly buying that vessel when we were over there. But luckily we didn't, and we ended up back in our hometown of Fremantle, where I've lived for the last 8 years and Base has lived for quite a few years as well. And when we found our vessel Charade, it was kind of serendipitous how it all happened. We came across her, and she ended up being the right boat for us to buy. She's commercially licensed, which means that we can do charters and a sailing school off of her. And she was not exactly a cruising boat. She was a local water cruiser, so she could do weekend trips away, but wasn't really set up for coastal cruising. But irregardless of that, as soon as we bought the boat, we started looking at, okay, well, I guess the Indian Ocean and the West Australian coast is our first destination. And getting up the West Australian coast is no easy feat. It's a very vast and extreme coastline, but we decided that that was going to be our first trip. We'll be hopping up the West Australian coast and eventually make our way to Indonesia. And, of course, the dream of surfing remote destinations and empty breaks where there's no other people, that was one of the draw cards. But the West Australian coast has this amazing history and this amazing, it's just got such a remote and wild feel to it. And so we really decided that, you know, going up this coastline, we would do some exploring. We weren't just going to bypass the West Australian coast and just get to Indonesia, which you could do probably in our boat in about 10 to 12 days. But we are going to take a couple months, and we're going to hop up the coast, and we're going to stop in the regional towns, and we're going to be looking at just exploring the different islands off of the coast, spending a bit of time looking at the history of Western Australia along the way, and looking at the old ships that actually got shipwrecked along this coast and how extreme of a coast it is. And so that was part of it. The other part is that my passion for the environment and my passion for sustainability brought me to look at the issue of marine pollution and plastic pollution in our oceans. And so one of the things we wanted to look at is doing citizen science projects as we go up the coast involving marine mammals, seabirds, phytoplankton, and of course, marine debris and plastic pollution. And so our aim was to get a trawl net behind our boat that we could be trawling for microplastics, but one thing led to another, and we haven't been able to secure that yet. We're hoping somewhere along the path we'll be able to get one. But what we are doing is microplastic surveys along any of the beaches that we visit. So we'll be looking at what's being found on those beaches, and then we'll be also looking at marine debris on the beaches and taking surveys of what's being found. So we'll be starting doing that as we go up the coast, and then we'll also be doing measuring phytoplankton through the Secchi disc. So the Secchi disc is a global study of phytoplankton using a white plastic disc that you lower into the water, and you have a black marks on those discs. And once you can no longer see the black on those discs, you measure the depth of how deep that is, and you can put it into an app that goes into a global study on phytoplankton, because phytoplankton is such an important part of our oceans and something that globally scientists don't know enough about and is something that they're trying to get a better understanding of. So on top of that, we'll be looking at recording marine mammals we see up the coast, which the Western Australia has some of the most amazing marine life. So far, we know that we'll be seeing dolphins, whales, whale sharks, sharks themselves, and sea lions, turtles, dugongs. The list is actually quite varied, and it'll be an amazing experience as we sail along to record what we see and actually put it into databases that scientists have so that they can be seeing whether marine mammals are traveling in season, out of season, looking at any discrepancies and things like that. So besides looking at the pollution, we're really excited to be looking at these other projects that are really about the health of our oceans, and including things like looking at the seabirds around us, and there'll be some amazing bird experiences along the way. And really, as we go up the coast, there's different areas we'll be visiting. So the first leg takes us up to the Abrolhos Islands, which is famous for the Batavia shipwreck, and we'll be telling you more about that once we get there. And then as you go further up the coast, we'll be visiting Shark Bay, Exmouth, we'll be in the Dampier Peninsula, and then as we continue up, we'll be hitting Broome, and then from Broome is the Kimberley region. And the Kimberley region is one of the most amazing last wild places on our planet, and so we'll be going through the offshore islands of the Kimberley leading up to Indonesia. And once we're in Indonesia, we'll be visiting East Indonesia and then sailing through that area. And from there, don't really know. We'll see how we go, we'll see how we're traveling, we'll see how the boat's faring, and if we're still enjoying it and we've still got money in our bank account, then we hope that we can keep going. But right now, the whole point is to help take you on this journey with us. So as we go up the coast, we'll be meeting amazing cruisers, fishermen, people living a very salty existence. And we'll be hopefully getting some interviews with people as we go, along with telling you about our adventures up the West Australian coast. So I hope you'll stay tuned to Salty Times Radio. My name's Jamie Van Jones, and I look forward to sharing this trip with you.
Hi, I'm Sarah O'Kelly, founder of Skipper's Review. I started Skipper's Review because I wanted somewhere online for my local boating community to make connections and recommendations. So now it's up and running. I've been getting out of the office to enjoy the Florida sunshine and to meet some of my members. Each week, you can hear me swapping salty tales with sailors, surfers, swimmers, divers, boat owners, and builders, anyone with a story to tell about their life and their relationship with the sea. So join me, Sarah O'Kelly, with Skipper's Review on Boat Radio.
This is Edward Smith from OPA Racing.
This is Ken Little, president of Glock Performance Boat Challenge.
Hi, this is Frank Pillsbury with Marine Max and the DFW International Boat Show in Dallas, Texas.
We explore all kinds of boating topics on Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show. Hi, I'm Captain Bob May. We get underway, making way, Saturday evenings here on Boat Radio.
This is Heather Lohe, Director of Membership for Boat US. Thanks for listening to Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show.
I'm Michael John, and each month on Boat Radio, I'll be looking at life on London's magnificent River Thames, from the dredgers emptying their cargoes of sand and gravel, to the mudlarks combing the shore for lost treasures. I'll be meeting the people, visiting the places, and boarding the ships that work this mighty, muddy artery. So join me, Michael John, for Tales of the Thames on Boat Radio.
You're listening to Salty Times on Boat Radio. We join Jamie and Bass off the coast of Western Australia.
With Captain Bass, first mate Jamie, clear away the tracking little boat.
So let me tell you a little bit about Bass. aka Sebastian. Sometimes I'll use that interchangeably because when I'm serious with him, he's Sebastian, and when I'm not, it's Bass because that suits him much better. But he has sailed from the time he was young. He grew up in Western Australia in a place called Mandurah and Mundijong, and he learned to sail through a family friend who had an old wooden gaff-rigged vessel. And they sailed on the Swan River, they sailed on the ocean, and he learned to sail from a young age. So I think he was about 10 when he started sailing, and sailed through his teen years. And I guess surfing took over at some point, and sailing kind of took the back burner. But he worked on a little offshore island called Rottnest, and I remember him telling me stories that sailors would come up and he would serve them at the bar, and I think that reignited his passion for sailing. And he went and did some international travel and ended up working on a boat in Greece, one of the classic wooden boats. I think they're called goulets, but he'll probably correct me on that. And he worked as a deckhand all-rounder on a Greek tourist boat that had lots of French tourist passengers that he would take out sailing. And so I think that got him again back on the boat path and a taste of the sailing life again. And then working on boats in California, doing boat detailing and things like that, he did a big trip going down from the west coast of America through all of Central America, all the way down to Costa Rica. And then by the time he got to Costa Rica, him and his mate had set up a surfing school, and he got wind of someone that needed crew to go across the Pacific on a catamaran. And in true Bass fashion, he jumped at the chance of another adventure, and he hopped on this boat with the captain and two other crew who have become good friends of ours, and they sailed from Panama across to Galapagos and then across the Pacific. So when I met Bass, the stories that I was told were things like arriving in the Tuamotus. We surfed this wave and there were sharks in the lagoon and we anchored off there, and oh, the stories are unbelievable. So the vast amount of sailing experience that he had when I met him kind of set me up for dreaming of what it would be like to do it with him and I. And of course, he's had some hairy experiences as well. He sailed, got to Tonga, and then jumped on a boat from Tonga to New Zealand, which led to a bit of a disaster. And I'm sure at some point he'll share that story. But Bass is a geologist, and he's a lover of the earth. He has an intense passion for nature and bird life and wildlife. And as a geologist, he worked on a gold mine for quite a few years when I first met him, flying in and flying out and working there. But then eventually moved into a hydrogeology position, which meant that he was working on groundwater. And that was something where I started to see Bass's passion start to align. I saw him as being a surfer and a sailor and a man who loves the ocean. And I could never understand how he could handle going out into the desert for a couple weeks at a time. But I think his love of rocks would take him there. But when he started learning about hydrogeology and all the areas that are impacted by groundwater and how much we rely on groundwater and know so little about how to find it, where it is, and how to manage it, he honed his skills working on this gold mine, helping them find and manage and utilize water resources in the middle of the desert. So his skills in that area are immense, and we're hoping at some point down the track that he can be combining his knowledge of hydrogeology and looking at areas on low-lying islands and how they're being impacted by water. But besides all of that, how do I describe Bass? He is the most fun-loving, easygoing guy, and at the same time, he's extremely practical, very safety-conscious, and takes being the captain of his own vessel very seriously. And so I love that he's got those two aspects to him, because we can be on an adventure, and I can feel like it is a big adventure, but that he will make sure that things are safe and he will make sure that we're okay. And he takes a lot of responsibility in that. And so oftentimes I have to tell him to not worry and to relax, because normally he does resort to the cruisy laid back guy that he is. But I think this trip is definitely going to challenge him in ways and put him on his toes a little bit to make sure that things go well. But I met Bass 8 years ago, and we got married a year ago, and he's my best friend, and he's definitely my soulmate and partner. And it's amazing being able to do this trip with him. And of course, when you live in close quarters, you never know how things are going to go. There's times. We've been on the boat for a year now, and there's always moments. I used to be able to just go for a walk down the beach when things got frustrating, and now I have to go for a swim and just deal with the fact that there's sharks around. So a little bit more, you have to go internal to get your alone time. But I wouldn't be doing this trip with anyone else, so Bice is definitely the man that I trust out on the water, and he's an amazing waterman and captain, and that's why it's amazing to do this trip with him.
With Captain Bice, first mate, Jamie! Clear away the track.
Now I'll introduce my lovely wife, Jamie Van Jones. Jamie and I first met 8 years ago. We had our first kiss on my little 24-foot Endeavour in the Swan River. I took Jamie down to the boat the day before I actually bought it. I put an offer on Gremlin, the little Endeavour, and that evening I took her down to it and showed her the boat, and then I stole the first kiss from her. I wasn't sure if she was into the boat or whether it was me, but it was quite an old boat. It was built in the 1960s, and so I'm pretty sure it was me rather than the boat. But our first year of dating involved sailing on the river, and then this progressed to sailing to the offshore island. Jamie's originally from inland Canada, from Ontario. She came out to Australia about 2 years before I actually met her, but she'd always been drawn to the coast, and her family originates from the east coast of Canada, and she went to university on the west coast of Canada. Growing up in Canada, and I think it's quite similar to Australia in terms of it's a place where there's a lot of wilderness, a lot of free space, and it sort of creates people who can be really connected to the nature and to the environment. What really attracted me to Jamie to begin with was her love of nature and adventure. She's not a shopping mall kind of girl. To begin with the sailing, Jamie didn't know the stern from the bow and which way to turn the tiller, but she loved the time on the boat and gradually learnt more and more. Soon we began talking about longer trips and a bigger boat, and it became a dream of the two of us to start the cruising life and to begin with to explore the Indian Ocean. If there's one thing I learnt about Jamie, is that once she sets her mind on something, she'll pursue it with all of her heart and soul and give it everything. From environmental living to living a healthy and sustainable life, and to start a cruising life. Jamie has been a real inspiration to getting us on the path of a cruising life, as well as giving other people inspiration and showing people the path of sustainable living. Jamie has a degree in sustainable development from Murdoch University. She worked in the environmental non-profit sector for the last 10 years. Has included working on water sanitation and hygiene in Africa. She has a drive to change the world for the better and leave a positive legacy. Once we bought Charade in Fremantle, I had to go away into the interior of Western Australia and work on the hydrogeology. Jamie stayed in Frio and she started gaining sea time. She completed a commercial coxswain's ticket and also volunteered with the Fremantle Sea Rescue. She spent a lot of the weekdays going out rescuing boats and towing vessels. One particular night, she was caught out at 12 o'clock at midnight, and she had to go out in 5-meter swells to help a hapless French sailor who actually lost his vessel. She started an online sustainable directory for the city of Fremantle. This is the Fremantle Green Guide. Then she started a consulting business with local government around sustainable living. While she was doing this, she learned how to make websites and also the secret art of marketing. Being on the eco-living journey herself, she started teaching courses and workshops how to live lighter on the planet in our local community. This led to the creating of the eco-living course and a website to inspire others to live lighter on the planet with ease. You can check this out on jamievanjones.com. I actually learned a lot from Jamie as well, and one of my wedding vows was not to use plastic bags anymore. Jamie is now doing online marketing, and with her eco-living services, this will keep the cruising kitty topped up on our trip. Jamie is down-to-earth, passionate and ambitious. She loves morning smoothies, snorkeling, surfing, fishing and sunset mojitos. I couldn't think of a better partner and soulmate to go sailing with on this trip. You're with Salty Times Radio. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll tell you all about our lovely vessel, Charade.
Hi, I'm Dave Dempsey from Marine Intelligence. If you're the owner or captain of a superyacht, then you know how expensive internet can be. And yes, it's a ripoff. We've made it our mission to revolutionize the world of marine communications. We will find you the best price for your internet by comparing all major vendors. And we do that for free. That's right, no charge to the boat. It's a free service. We get you the best price for your yacht, whether it's just one boat or a fleet of boats, and all the savings will be passed on to you. We can save you over $1,000 US per meg. So stop doing what you're doing and visit marineintelligence.net now, before you forget.
You're listening to Salty Times on Boat Radio. We join Bass and Jamie off the coast of Western Australia.
Now we're going to tell you more about our lovely vessel Charade. But Jamie doesn't like to call her Charade.
No, I don't. I feel like Charade sounds like she's playing a game on us, and I prefer Lady C because she's got more of a classic look and she's too much of a lady to be called Charade.
But I won't let her change the name because it's supposed to be bad luck for sailors to change the names of the ships.
Which I think is all superstition. But anyway, so we call her Charade officially and Lady C affectionately.
Charade is a Bruce Roberts, Henry Morgan catch.
Henry Morgan is like the pirate off the rum bottle.
And being a catch, it has the forward mast is tall, slightly taller than the aft mast. She's more of a traditional style looking vessel.
She's got really nice lines, she has high freeboard, and she even has a clipper bow that comes up out of the water.
Yeah, with a nice 4 foot long bowsprit as well.
And she's a long keeled catch, so the keel goes straight from underneath us, and it goes down 1.38 meters. So it's a shoal draft, which means that she doesn't draw too deep, but it also means that we need to be careful in bigger seas.
Yeah, that's right, Jamie. Also, it's a center cockpit with the separate aft cabin,
which has turned a little bit into a storage shed when we don't have other people on board. But when we do have other people on board, we put stuff away better. And we have actually 3 bunks in the back that people can sleep on. But more comfortably, it'd be 2 people sleeping in the aft cabin.
Yeah, that's right. And also, so it's fiberglass, C-Flex, hand-laid fiberglass. And she's really solid. Everyone who comes on board, whenever I've had a shipwright come on board and help out with the work, we've put any holes through the deck or through-hole fittings, everyone's so surprised how thick she actually is.
Which is, you know, gives you peace of mind that if we do hit something, it'll take a significant hit to actually put a hole in the vessel. But we're going to try to avoid hitting anything on this trip. The other thing that's really amazing about Charade is that she's got watertight bulkheads through the entire vessel, which means that if we were to get a hole in the hull forward at the bow, that we can close 2 watertight bulkheads and protect that area. So if it started to fill with water, we could have the bilge pump going, but it would separate it from the rest of the boat. Now that's built for safety in Charade.
A lot of ships have the separate compartments. And when we get surveyors come on board checking out Charade or doing for surveying, they're really impressed with all the compartments and the bulkheads.
Which is an amazing thing. So Charade has been a licensed charter boat for years now.
Since
1990. That means that Charade can be run as a small charter boat and also as a sailing school, which she was done for 20 years under the previous owner.
That's right. And she was built in 1979 and launched in 1980. And then she was in survey since 1990. So when we first bought Charade, or when we first came down to check it out in Fremantle, we were really impressed with all the safety specs she had, and also the fact that she was in survey, which is a real bonus because it's quite difficult to get small boats in survey in Australia, and particularly in Western Australia.
And so that was one of the draw cards of why we decided that Charade was the right boat for us. So she wasn't set up as a long-term cruiser, but she was set up for local cruising and to be run as a sailing school. So we've had to put some additional features on her, but one of the benefits of having her under commercial survey is every year she has to go under safety inspection. So basically they'll be looking at the integrity of the boat, making sure that it's safe, and also all of our safety gear has to be kept up. And every second year, she needs to be pulled out of the water so that they can do a hull inspection, and every fourth year, a prop inspection.
Which is great. It just keeps it up to a high standard, especially the safety survey. They come on board and make sure all of our safety gear is up to date. And every second year, they look at the hull and make sure there's no osmosis and everything like that. But we've had Charade since 2013. And we've gone through three surveys so far.
And she always passes with flying colours.
Yeah, we're quite nervous each time, going overboard, getting it all prepped and everything for the survey. But yeah, she passes each time, no problems.
I think the surveyors like the fact that she's almost like a little ship. So she's got the bulkheads and all the different bilges. And everything's really dry in the bilges as well. And I guess the thing that, surveyors come and they see that she's been in survey for this long, and as long as she's being maintained, then we'll be able to keep our survey, which is great.
And then when we bought Charade, a lot of people here who have bought second-hand boats before or used boats, they realise they come with so many extras. And it took us like a year to figure out what some what some parts were for. And
yeah, all the spares and...
Oh, not only did we buy the boat in the water, also we filled up like a storage shed of all the spares and all the extras as well. So it was, and then actually when we left, or when we were planning to leave, it was a huge, it was quite a job to decide what to leave and what to take with us.
Yeah, so in the storage shed we've got spare sails and all sorts of spare gear. And, you know, we had to, I guess, declutter the boat to really make it into a cruising vessel. So we took a lot of extra stuff off that we weren't going to need, but then we just kept the basic essentials. And then at the same time, we added so much to Charade to make her into a coastal cruiser.
Yeah, so for the past 2 years we've been... adding a lot to her. We've what have we added, James?
Well, we've got the solar panels on the back, but to put the solar panels on, we had to figure out where we were going to put them. So we had to get a bimini created. So we've got a bimini over our aft seat, and on top of that, we have 200 watts of semi-rigid solar panels. Now, that provides charge for our two different batteries that run our crank battery and our house battery. We have a little angle fridge in the back that we put in because she just has a...
It's a 30-litre fridge. And we also have a cool box on board. So we use the fridge to freeze water bottles, and we use them for coolers for the cool box.
Yeah, which has worked okay, but we had to get a second battery to support that.
A third battery.
a third battery.
And then also we added a wind vane, which is a self-steering wind vane. It's an old Fleming thing. It's probably the same age as the boat, maybe a little bit older. So we picked that up and we've added that, and we're still trying to figure out how to use that. And so when we get underway, that will be helping out a lot. We've added two new winches. We've replaced the stays. We've replaced the halyards. We've given the deck a paint, so she's a lovely baby blue colour.
Matches Lady C very nicely. We have multiple shades of blue on board Lady C. We actually also put in opening port lights, so opening windows in the forward cabin. So we've got 8 different windows, but we only bought 6 opening ones because that's all we could afford at the time. But we got them from a great company called Newfound Metals, and they're really, really quality stainless steel port lights. And can't even tell you the difference that that makes in opening up the cabin and allowing us to have airflow throughout the cabin as well, which will be really beneficial once we're in the tropics.
Exactly. And then also electrics. We've added radios, plotter.
Yeah, Raymarine chart plotter.
Stereo system.
Oh yeah, music, of course. That's one of the most important things. When we're cruising, we always love to have music going. So adding a stereo and outdoor speakers to the boat was a job that was actually quite high on our priority list.
And then we've converted all of our lights to LED for power consumption. Jamie's done a lot of work with making cushions,
comfort.
And then we've bulked up. We've added extra cleats.
We've got a new life raft. So we've got an 8-man life raft on board, which may sound overkill when it's just the two of us, but when we're doing charters, we need to have 8-man life raft for overnight charters, and so that's what we have that on board, and that gets serviced every year.
The other thing about having Charade in survey, being a commercial vessel. Last year, we actually started up Southern Cross Sailing, which has been a sailing charter business out of Fremantle. And also, we've been doing lessons, teaching people to sail.
Yeah, we created a 5-week course called Learn the Ropes, which basically gives people a taste of what sailing's all about. It takes a long time to really, you know, learn the ins and outs of sailing. So the aim of the course was just to get people hands-on sailing for one night a week for 3 to 4 hours. and learn a little bit about the theory, learn a little bit about wind direction, a little bit about weather and navigation, but mostly to get people's hands on the ropes, on the helm, and actually getting the feel for what sailing's all about. So we ran two of those over summer, and they were great fun.
And then we're doing overnight charters to the offshore islands off Fremantle, to Rottnest and Karnak Island. And overall, it was quite a successful summer, and also it got us to learn charade a lot more and get us ready for the trip which we're about to embark on. And then 2015 was a big year. Jamie and I both had to go and get our commercial licenses as well. I did my RYA Yacht Master and got that commercially endorsed, and Jamie did her coxswain's.
Yeah, and just having those tickets means that we can run charade as a commercial vessel, and so having those up our sleeve are great to have. And yeah, we really enjoyed taking people out sailing and giving them that experience of what being on charade is like and everything that we love about sailing. So getting to do that over summer was amazing, and we're hoping that as we cruise up the West Australian coast and we stop in other places like Exmouth and Broome, where there's some tourists, that we can hopefully be doing some day sails on charade once we get to those places, and hopefully top up the sailing kitty a little bit as well.
And also we got to try out all of our sails. When we bought our charade, she came with a huge sail wardrobe because she's actually a cutter ketch, so we have a staysail set up, and we have four head sails.
All different sizes and setups, so we can be running so many different sail combinations. And learning how to sail a ketch was also something really interesting for us, because there's times when a ketch is extremely handy, and then there's times where the mizzen, you actually don't need it up. So when the wind's behind us, it just gets in the way, and so we usually have to lower the mizzen at that time.
It took quite a while to learn the ketch, because a lot of ketches I have sailed on ketches in the past, but the skippers have always sort of been pretty keen to put the engine on as soon as the sailing gets a bit difficult. And I'm a little bit traditionalist, and I don't like to... I try to turn the engine on only when we need to turn it on. So
absolutely, only when we need it. And there's times where I'm kind of nudging Bay, saying, don't we need the engine now? Don't we need the engine? And he always resists until the very last minute.
But we figured out some great sailing combinations and sails beautifully with the Yankee sail, head sail, and a staysail, as well as the mizzen and the mainsail. And cruising speed, we probably do about 6 knots cruising speed. Max speed would be 8 knots. And then...
And light winds.
Light winds, we have...
3 knots.
3.5, 4 knots.
So, I mean, she weighs 7 tons, and she's got a beam of 10 feet across, so she's very beamy. And that means that she's very stable, so she doesn't tip over as much as you see other kind of racing yachts. So she's definitely
very comfortable to sail.
A cruising boat. But we learned the hard way, I guess, last year, that, yeah, she doesn't sail that well into the wind. And most boats, you know, can get up to 45 degrees. We're probably in an additional
55. But with the shoal draft, you get quite a bit of leeway, which is the drag you get across downwind. So, yeah, we're looking at about 55 degrees when it's short seas and heading into the wind.
So I've got this great saying that you always sail by the wind and with the wind and never against the wind. And it was actually Bass's sailing mentor, who's now in his 80s, that taught Bass to sail when he was a young boy, that said that one to me. And it stuck with me, and we say it all the time, by the wind and with the wind, never against the wind. And I guess in terms of living on charade, she's quite comfortable. So we can both stand upright through the whole boat. As you walk through the different bulkheads, you do need to duck a little bit. Well, Bass does, but I don't. We have a forward V berth where Bass and I sleep and where we keep all of our belongings and clothes. We've got a head, which is the toilet and a shower in there, as well as a pantry. And in the main part of the boat, we've got a beautiful chart table that we eat at, and a little library section, as well as kind of a small galley with a 2-burner gas stove and a small sink, and some storage for easy to grab food items just above that. And then the center cockpit is really amazing because you feel very secure on the boat. So there's night shift, you know, times when we're sailing at night where it feels really nice to not just have the cockpit at the aft of the boat or the back of the boat. So I really enjoy having the center cockpit. And it's also a nice entertaining area as well. And then in the aft cabin is, yeah, like we said, it's our little guest room slash storage shed. So we keep our surfboards back there on the back bunk. And then when people come, we kind of shuffle things around. And we've got two comfortable bunks back there for people to sleep in. So overall, I'd say Charade is really comfortable for two people to live on and is manageable with four. But you just have to know that
Not for long term.
Well, you just have to know that you're going to be in close quarters, and you have to kind of maneuver around people a little bit. And when one person's in the galley, everybody else can go into the cockpit and wait until that person's done cooking. It's kind of like that. But Bass and I have learned a really easy way of how to maneuver around the boat and not bump into each other.
And the beauty about Sheree, she also has a lot of, for her size, she has a lot of deck space.
Hmm.
Jamie can throw a yoga mat out and do some yoga on the aft as well.
Which is great.
And also in the cockpit, there's plenty of room. We set a little seat up right next to the mizzen mast, and you can steer, which is a wheel-steered vessel. And, yeah, it's comfy. We have safety rails right around the boat, and it's all solid stainless steel, so you feel like you're really quite safe sitting in when you walk around the deck as well.
Yeah. And our engine, so we've got a 20-horsepower Yanmar diesel engine in a small engine room that's accessible through the aft cabin. And it's actually quite good access to the engine. You can get around to both sides of it, and you can really have, you know, you still have to squeeze in there a little bit, but you get good access to the engine. And the engine's old. How old is it, Bass?
Yes, as old as a boat.
Yeah, so it's old.
It's been reconditioned.
Yeah, but it, you know, it runs well, and being 20 horsepower, we only rely on it for certain circumstances.
It's
and
really auxiliary, so it gets us in and out of harbours and
close quarter manoeuvring.
And also, when you do have some difficult seas and we can't tack, I turn it on and just to get the bow around as well.
But I mean, in light winds, you can do a little bit of motor sailing with her, but we try to keep the engine use, like Bay said, to minimal. And overall, we love Charade. She's a great vessel, and she's exactly what we need at this point in our journey. So we used to have a 24-foot Endeavor, and then the next step up was Charade. And yeah, I wouldn't trade her in right now. I absolutely love Charade, and we've been living on her for nearly a year and a half. And she's, yeah, everything we need in a boat. You love her too, don't you, Bice?
Oh, absolutely.
So that's a bit about Lady C, and you know, as we go through each episode, we'll be sharing more and hopefully getting some videos up online so you can actually have a look at what she's like and what we've done with her. We're just going to take a quick short break, and when we come back, we'll be sharing with you about how this whole dream got started, how we got into the sailing life, and how we made this happen. So we hope you'll stick with us. This is Jamie and Bass from Salty Times.
You're listening to Salty Times on Boat Radio. We join Jamie and Bass off the coast of Western Australia.
So for about 7 years ago, when Bass and I were kind of in our, I don't know, I'd say our first year of dating, we were doing so much sailing on the Swan River, and we started talking about the dream of getting a bigger boat. So 7 years ago, I feel like that was the start of it. And we made a decision that every decision we were going to make in the next 7 years had to actually end up in us getting a boat while we're still in our 20s.
So we started saving, putting a little bit away for the future plan. So I was working away, and in the meantime, we both, Jamie and I, just kept doing sailing trips on our little boat, and we started, that's when we really started dreaming about it, hey?
Yeah. And then from there, you know, life kind of throws you in different directions, but we did a few trips, but it was always the main goal. So we kind of avoided that, the path of looking at buying a house, which a lot of our friends have houses and have mortgages to go with them, and buying a house in Western Australia is really expensive.
I think one of our problems is, Jamie, that it's hard to do 2 years for us at a time. We sort of do 2 years and we have to shoot off somewhere and go travelling. So we, you know, in the last 7 years, we've had quite a lot of adventures. We've both been to Africa and North Canada.
We've done
Central America surfing, and we've done trips to Indonesia. And so we've always been really having quite an adventurous life. But then when we're saving, we sort of make the sacrifices and just sort of put our money away for the most important things, and that is for us, for adventure and sailing.
Yeah, and that just meant, you know, things like when there was music festivals on, we would say, actually, let's just keep it in the boat fund. Or when, you know, shopping just wasn't something that I like to do much anyway. So we bought all our stuff secondhand, and we made sure that our house was furnished with all stuff from garage sales and things like that. So we've lived for the past 5 years pretty cheap, which has been good. And saving money along the way. and working quite hard to get to this point. Anyway, so we've been thinking about this trip and kind of getting ready, and then 3 years ago when we got the boat, we started then really thinking about what was going to happen. And for us, it was about this different lifestyle. So Bass was working as a hydrogeologist, and he was going out into the bush. I was running my own business, looking at sustainability consulting and helping businesses become sustainable.
And that put us apart, that, you know, so we wouldn't see each other for a couple of weeks at a time. I'd be doing 14 days away and then getting a week off. So we really pushed through those few years.
But it was good because I always knew that the plan was to go cruising. So I looked at how to turn my job into one that was about being online and being location independent.
So that's the great thing about Jamie. She can pick up things on computers and making websites. She picks it up so quickly, so she can sustain us on our trip.
Yeah, and so that was a good thing, is that I started an online directory. I learned how to make websites, and then I got really interested in online marketing. So I did a few courses, and I started studying online marketing. And with running my own business and helping other businesses get their websites up and running through the focus of sustainability, I started learning a lot more about online marketing and how to help small businesses get their message out there.
And before you knew it, just, you know, when we were sailing on Charade and just doing little day trips, Jamie would take the photos, and next minute there was a website, and we had all the social media sites, and it's a great way to put our photos up and share our story with other people.
Yeah, and so I did all the marketing for Southern Cross Sailing, and, you know, we had a successful first season, so that kind of shows like I've got my head around kind of online marketing. And, you know, over the course of the last year, I've worked with probably 15 to 20 different clients for long periods of time, and I have 5 clients that are still my clients right now that I work for. And so it's just something that I love to do, everything from websites to helping them get their marketing messages and their copyright and doing newsletters and all sorts of things, editing videos. Yeah, the list of things that I do online is quite endless. But it means that as we're sailing, I'll be still working. So as long as I have internet connection, I can still be working. I can still be helping clients spread their message. And when I don't have internet connection, that's something that I kind of negotiate with my clients of when we're out of range and things like that.
Yeah, so I finished work last year. Mm-hmm. In April. I resigned and finished up. That was just 3 months after our wedding. So, yeah, last year was a big year. We got married, and then also I finished up my hydrogeology job.
Yeah.
And the plan was for us to go sailing last year. And
straight after our wedding.
But, I mean,
we bit off more than we could chew, I think. Getting married and then getting everything done on the boat meant that we missed the weather window to go north. And we learned a few lessons with a winter front coming and knocking us a little bit about. So we broke a few things on the boat and we had to repair them. And we decided that we needed to take another year, which is when the next weather window is. So April's the best time to leave. April, May is the best time to go north from Fremantle, because then you've got the cyclone season the rest of the year.
We're so burnt out, though, even just from like doing so much work and then finishing up and just going straight in the boat, trying to get everything ready in 2 months. I ended up going back to work for a couple of months, and then after that we went to Indonesia for 2 months.
Yeah, just over 2 months.
We decided what we should do is run Charade as a you know, commercial boat
that summer. And a sailing school.
So we just thought, like, we'll go to Indonesia. Of course we'd be getting surfing in. I was probably surfing about 6 hours a day.
Yeah, I know. I was like trying to get Bass to study his yacht master over in Indo.
Doing my yacht master, and then I was going to get it commercially endorsed, and I got that all done when I got back after Indonesia.
Yeah, and the whole time I was working like 3 or 4 hours a day and covering our living expenses. So we tried to save as much money, especially in the last year. We've lived on the boat for nearly a year and a half now, and part of that was to be able to save rent so that everything could go towards the boat and towards the cruising kitty. So it's been good. We've learned how to live as cheap as possible to kind of adapt to the cruising life.
Yeah, and Indonesia was fantastic. We're living over in Indo, we do it pretty basic. We went to Java and Sumatra, and also just in Bali, but even all those places we just lived, you know, we stayed at the
family-owned
sort of guest houses, and you know, we're just eating rice and and nasi goreng.
Yeah, and banana pancakes. You know, it was basic local food, and we were probably
spending $20 a day.
Yeah, between the two of us.
Yeah, so that was really good.
Yeah.
But then once we got back, I went and sat all my tests and everything to get all the commercial side of the sailing, so we could start Southern Cross Sailing up. Jamie got the marketing going, and then, summer's just been flat out, and it's worked so well. So we've been doing sailing charters out of Fremantle.
and doing day sails over to Karnak Island. So our most popular charter was probably that. We'd take a group of up to 10 people over to Karnak Island, and it's a little offshore island with a beautiful little bay. It's a nature reserve, so you're not allowed to go onto the island, but anchoring in the bay, it's beautiful snorkel around the outside of it, and there's sea lions on the beach, so we got to show people the sea lions, and sometimes the sea lions would even come swim up to the boat, and people would get to actually have a swim with them. So that was a pretty amazing experience.
And the sailing was brilliant as well. We had winds every day, and Fremantle is a bit of a world-renowned sailing destination. In the 80s, there was the America's Cup, and that's when finally the Australia 2 took the America's Cup for the first time. And sort of growing up here...
He still likes to rub that in all the time.
But growing up here in Western Australia and Fremantle, it's a lot of people sailing. Sailing's a really one of the main attractions of Fremantle. Probably the best part about the is the wind. In summer, every day you'd get this about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You'd get a consistent sea breeze come in. The sea breeze is what the locals call the Fremantle Doctor. So during summer, you just get these beautiful clear skies and get so hot. You know, you're talking high 30s degrees Celsius up to even the mid 40s. And everyone's sweltering. And then by 1 o'clock, this really hardcore sea breeze comes in, blows up to 20, 25 knots at times, but it cools everyone down. So people do welcome it. But also it means, you know, you can sail back from the islands. You know, once everyone had their lunch and we've had the barbecue and everything, we could just wait for the Freo Doctor to come in and we'd sail back to our port. So, yeah, it was really...
It was a really fun summer, and we got to share our love of sailing with other people. And I think that was one of the best things, was we're so passionate about this lifestyle and what we're doing that we wanted to just show people a little bit about what living on a boat and sailing a boat and what cruising's all about. So we did a few overnight charters to Rottnest Island, which is the local beautiful island, just 19 kilometers offshore?
Yeah, 19.
And it's just a gorgeous place that we could take people overnight and anchor up and show them what the cruising life was like.
It gave us a taste of cruising on trade too. Just, you know, taking a couple over to Rottnest for one or two nights and loading the boat up for those few days, and it was good training for us, as also for the trip which we're about to embark on as well.
Yeah. We stopped doing charters mid-April. So from April and all of May, we did everything we possibly could to get the rest of the boat stuff ready. So when you're planning like a sailing trip, you really have to plan to be self-sufficient, and you need to have everything. You know, you need spares, you need to double check things, you need to just make sure you've got the boat pretty kitted out for the next, 8 to 10 months to a year. And so we did a lot of different jobs. We had probably 4 pages of to-do lists that we were working through. And then we also had the threat that winter was starting a bit early. So we started to get a few fronts come through, and we started to feel that itch that we needed to be.
And I was starting to get a bit stressed out. And for all the people who know me, it's not often they see Bass stressed out.
No, you're not.
But I was. Stressed. I mean, it was sort of, it's just been 7 years of talking about a adventure about to go on, and then the big build-up, and then last year and it not happening. And then just all the prep and everything all through summer and the sailing through summer. But then just that last month we're on at the moment, it's just been quite... everything seems to be compressed. Like, why didn't I do this 6 months ago? Why didn't I do this 10 months ago? And we thought we did so much work on the boat already.
Yeah.
We didn't realise there was that much to do. And it was just really compressed into you know, the last month.
And we've been doing, 10-hour days focused on boat tasks. And that it's been everything from getting nationally registered under Australian registration through to making sure all our safety gear is intact, to putting the port lights in.
And even some days the surf was brilliant. It was a nice swell, and it was offshore, and I was sort of looking up and sniffing about, thinking, oh, this might be breaking, or that wave would be good today. But it was really hard. We just sort of pushed through, and we're just so focused. We really gave it all that last month, and I think you had to.
Yeah, and it was hard because we were really trying not to spend money, so it meant trying to still be cooking meals on the boat as you're working on it all day, and not go to a nice little cafe.
Jamie, I was sneaking a bit of meat here and there and some chicken, because I knew that it was going to be a long time before I'd be doing that, just be fish and vegetables. So
Bass only eats meat probably 10% of the... Well, our diet consists of very little meat because I'm a vegetarian, but Bass always kind of, whenever he gets the opportunity, if we go out for dinner or something like that, he has meat. But so we had to provision the boat with 6 months of dry goods and supplies, and in the next episode we'll be telling you more about how that process has been going. And so it's been, yeah, it's been a crazy time this last month, but we've been enjoying it. And it's been, we've tried to be considering that it is part of the journey. The journey isn't actually about getting to someplace. It's about this whole process. And that's part of this lifestyle that we're trying to live, is how can we cruise, live on a boat, and actually have a lifestyle that suits what we love, which is adventure, travel, surfing, and sailing.
But also sending a message out as well of it, you know, how beautiful the world is and how beautiful this coastline is, and how we should protect it and do everything we can to protect it.
Yeah, definitely. And so as we're doing all these different projects along the way, we're really sharing about our love and passion for the ocean, as well as, I guess, just living life a little bit outside the box. I mean, a lot of our friends have kids now, which is definitely something on the cards for us, but we just didn't really want to settle into a mortgage and a big house just yet. So we're kind of looking at the boat life for the next, I don't know, who knows how long, but I love it and hoping that we can make it last.
Absolutely, Jamie. Now we're going to play a bit of a sea shanty for you guys.
This song was adapted by the band The Lost Keys, which is a local sea shanty band in our hometown of Fremantle. And they heard about our trip and we asked them if they could help us out with a sea shanty. And so they took an old sea shanty and put in some words just for Salty Times.
And they recorded it in a whaling tunnel in Fremantle, in a limestone cave. Yeah, listen to it.
The smartest long-tailed catch you'll find is ho-way, ho-way, you must done. She's the lady say of the salty times. Clear away the track and let the bull jibe. Run to me, hey, rig a jig, she's a jaunting free. Ho-way, ho-way, you must done. All hands aboard on the lady say. Clear away the track and let the bull jibe. Run other outward bound for the East Indies. Ho-way, ho-way, you must done. With Captain Bass, first mate Jamie. Clear away the track and let the bull jibe. Run to me, hey, rig a jig, she's jaunting free. Ho-way, ho-way, you must done. All hands aboard of the lady sea. Clear away the track and let the bull jibe run. And when they're back in 302, ho-way, ho-way, you must done. They'll stand us whiskies all the way. Clear away the track and let the bull jibe run. To me, hey, rig-a-jig, they're jaunting free. Ho-way, ho-way, you must done. All hands aboard of the lady sea. Clear away the track and let the bull jibe run. As long he'll catch you fine. Ho way, ho way, you must done. She's the lady staying at the salty time. Clear away the track and let the bull jibe run. To me, hey, rig a jig, she's jaunting free. Ho way, ho way, you must done. All hands aboard of the lady sing. Clear away the track and let the bull jibe run.
In next week's episode, we're going to be sharing with you about how we're getting ready to set sail, about how we're doing all of our provisionings, how we're keeping it low waste and plastic free, and doing it as sustainably as we can. So we hope you'll join us in next week's episode, and we look forward to sharing it with you then. If you want to find out more about our trip, check out www.saltytimes.com and also check us out on Instagram and Facebook under Salty Times and the hashtag Salty Times. And I guess until next time,
stay salty.
See ya.
I'm standing on the ancient battlements of Castel de Belvere on a high hilltop overlooking the magnificent city of Palma de Mallorca, vibrant capital of the Balearics, an island group in the Mediterranean Sea, which washes the shores of Morocco, Spain, France, Italy, Croatia, Greece, and many other great seafaring nations. Arrayed before me, along Palma's waterfront and onward to the town of Arenal, are tens of thousands of boats. There are juggernauts stacked with containers, cruise ships packed with tourists, ferries, freighters, mega yachts, motorboats, super yachts, sailboats, dinghies, dories, kayaks, sculls, and skiffs. Plus, of course, the ubiquitous yacht, the traditional double-ended fishing boat of these islands. Boats are this city's business: building, maintaining, repairing, refitting, and of course, selling them. And Palma has become, has perhaps always been, a world-renowned centre of excellence for sailing and for naval craftsmanship. So there's really no better place in the world to launch Boat Radio, a station for boat owners and sailors, water sports enthusiasts, armchair adventurers, and ocean lovers everywhere. Each week, there'll be programmes from the Arctic Circle, the Bahamas, Florida, Missouri, Australia, the United Kingdom, Italy, Croatia, Mallorca, and a dozen other places, as well as from the cockpits and wheelhouses of boats.
Hello, I'm Captain Bob May from Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show, and you're listening to Boat Radio.
Each month on Boat Radio, I'll be looking at life on London's magnificent River Thames, from the dredgers emptying their cargoes of sand and gravel to the mudlarks combing the shore for lost treasures.
Each week, you can hear me swapping salty tales with sailors, surfers, swimmers, divers, boat owners, boat builders, anyone with a story to tell about their life and their relationship with the sea.
We'll hear compelling tales and inspiring stories from often ordinary people who've done extraordinary things.
We did find an iceberg, but there is no such thing as smooth sailing when you're going north or when you're sailing as much as Ben and I do.
We'll be joined by many of the most prominent names from the fields of sailing, exploration and endurance sports.
Mark getting a nice puff of breeze on Taylor Canfield, leading Ian Williams. He's in the black boat, jiving now.
We'll delve into the glamorous world of the super yacht.
Summer comes around, we're ready to go, and all the boats start arriving back from the Caribbean, and we all get together third week of June.
But we'll also learn how to live off-grid aboard a more modest vessel.
I'm one of those lucky guys that didn't have to try and convince his wife to go on their sea dreams. I was thrilled with the idea of living on the boat.
We'll attend classic regattas at some of the most picturesque sailing locations on Earth.
I'm standing in the Fort Adams State Park in Rhode Island, looking back across the water to the city of Newport, sparkling in the early morning sunshine.
And we'll hear from scientists in some of the most forbidding environments.
Welcome to Ocean Research Project. My name is Matt Rutherford, and I am here in Sisimiut, Greenland.
There'll be recommended routes, anchorages and marinas. There'll be practical tips, medical advice, accurate weather forecasts, and, in addition, an indelible streak of marine conservation. And we'll hear from you, I hope, listening at home or at work, perhaps afloat somewhere. So, welcome to Boat Radio. We're glad you can join us in promoting and celebrating the wonderful world of boats.